Welcome to A Coffee Podcast by Roastful, a podcast where we discuss topics about coffee that folks within the coffee industry would want to listen to. I'm your host, Zach Stamey.
Well, hey, Weehong, it's so good to see you, man. It's so good to hear from you. I'm excited to have you on the show because we've, like, I tell people all the time whenever even last year when you placed second place and this year when you placed first place, every time I'm like, that Weehong Zhang, he deserves it. He is such a humble guy. I'm honored to know you. I can say truly from the limited time I've been around you, like you're an extremely humble man. You carry yourself, with so much dignity, and, I have a lot of respect for you. So I'm glad to have you on the show and get to hear some of your perspective on this topic we've been talking about recently.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. So Weehong, for the listener that may not know who you are, explain just a little bit about yourself. Tell us about Blendin. Tell us about you in competition and things of that nature.
Okay. So my name is Weihong Zhang, and I came to United States back in 2009, and I was doing my PhD in biochemistry. And at 2014, I got my PhD, and then I moved to Houston to work at Baylor College of Medicine. Pharmacology department, we're doing like a drug design. And in one of the kind of like conference trip, I stumbled upon a coffee cupping in Arizona. And I had my magic cup of coffee, which is a Kenya. And okay. I still remember that cup of coffee. It was by Moat Coffee Roaster from UK, from Leeds, yeah. UK. And I was like, wow, coffee could taste like that. So from that point, I think it was back in 2015, I started to learn about coffee and I tried to get like all the resources I could get. In 2017, I quit my job and opened a coffee shop called Blending Coffee Club. It's also a roastery and a training lab. And yeah, I started to involve in competition in 2020. And I think that's my first competition that I met you.
Yep. And that was both of our first year, actually. Yeah,
in Orange County. I remember that was probably one of my best competition experience because that was my first time competing in national. And not only I get into the finals, but I got the third. So it was more than what I could expect. And then immediately after that, COVID happened. So there was a 2-year gap for me. And then 2023, I get back to competition and I get the second. And this year I get the first. So it's like a kind of like a chance.
Yeah, it is. I thought that was so funny when it happened that way because, like you said, 2020 was your first year. That was my first year too, and it just turned out you were a lot better competitor than me because you placed. I was in the back of the pack in nationals. I was like placed 27 or something like that, and you were number 3. But then it went to number 2 and number 1. It was just like you kept getting a little bit better every year. But that's really cool.
Yeah, competition is very random. Like I always talk to my baristas, and you know when we chat to our coffee friends, sometimes we feel like the people placed lower than the finalists, they all spent like equal amount of time and effort preparing for their routine, selecting their coffees. So all of, especially like when I was in Ward, I didn't even get into semifinals. But I realized that a lot of great competitors are not going into semifinals. Sure. So they spend a lot of time. And I think that's something that I start to keep my focus and keep my eyes on on those competitors who did not get into semifinals, because they may spark a lot of great ideas for competition or to advance the coffee industry. But because sure. of some of the area that they did not perform very well on the stage, so they couldn't get all the attention, like the semifinalists and the finalists and the champion. But they sure. actually carry almost the equal weight to advance the whole industry to move forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's actually probably a good gateway to our conversation today, because I think in my experience, at least with sometimes when people are not placing quite as high as others, it can sometimes be because of just green coffee. And it yeah. can sometimes be because of maybe the current trends with processing and coffee. Not always. I think there are something Patrick Rolf reminded me of in our conversation was there are a lot of really, really, really highly processed and process forward types of coffees that don't make the finals. Like if you make the finals, you were a great competitor. But at the same time, I think there are several things, coffee processing included, that can tend to push a competitor maybe a little bit farther along. So I did want to ask you a little bit about that topic today, since that's what we're talking about. What are some of your thoughts on the current trends we're seeing in green coffee in coffee competitions? I want to hear kind of what you're thinking from the positives first, because I think there are some great positives, and I think there are some negatives too. But what are some of the positives that you're seeing come from the current trends with maybe more process forward coffee flavor profiles in competition today?
I think it's highly depend on what stage you are at. Okay. Like you're at national, the judges are way more open-minded and they like to sure. try new things. And they sometimes a very balanced, heavy processing coffee and also very innovative process will open their eyes and they just love it. And this is my impression on the world stage. This is my first time, like this year, it was my first time competing in the world. And I realized that, hey, a heavily processed coffee is not very well received from the judges' side. And as you can see, like most of the finalists, they use very clean coffees. And that's pretty much just the trend. But I think one thing that I feel processing or like heavily processed coffee having a added value to sure. the not so popular varietals in the competition. Let's say you can see a lot of competitors using, for example, Cartimore, Catura, Catuai to compete, and they get very, very good results. Is all of this because of processing? Like this coffee, those coffees, if processed as washed, won't compete with, for example, Geisha and some sure. other more expensive varietals. But this sure. processing actually helps to reduce the cost for competition a lot. I think that's generally the positives I see in the processing in the competition. It has an added value to compete with sure. those very rare and very expensive coffees.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the what you experienced in the world competitions? You said right now maybe more process forward coffees are not being received as well by judges in the world competition. Obviously, I haven't made it that far myself, so my experience is more centered around U.S. national competitions, obviously, where we are seeing a lot of, you know, very process forward types of coffees. But talk a little bit about what you're seeing in the world competitions with how the judges are tending to receive those types of coffees.
Yeah, I think if you look at the finalists and what coffee they're using, they generally use the very clean processed coffee. And even sure. some of the natural coffee that you're using, they are trying to do a very, very clean natural. And you see like a lot of, I think four out of six competitors this year, finalists, they all use like a Panama Geisha. And this is a, as I am a Best of Panama judge, and I can see that Panama producers, they have a vision, is to be process this coffee as clean as possible to showcase the terroir of the Panama, because they have the probably one of the best terroirs in the world. So this is a, they have a laser focus as a group of producers from Panama. They have the laser focus focus on this vision, which is process all the coffee clean to showcase the terroir. And as versus, you know, if you look at a lot of Colombian producers, they like to get the coffee heavily processed and getting very interesting and unique flavors. No matter what kind of terroir they have or what kind of varietal they use, they want to have a more added value in their processing.
Yeah.
So I think it used to be like Colombia has the most chance to win. I think I looked at some statistics on winning the World Brewers Cup. But in recent years, I feel like there is a trend to going back to a more clean coffee. Just because, you know, the processing has been advanced way faster than we expected. There are new flavors in coffee every year, and it's been a little bit too fast for the world judge to be able to perceive it. If you see the rules for Brewers Cup, the year before, the rule doesn't allow any secondary processing, for example, co-fermentation, or like even decaf, the rule is not allowed. But this year, the rule actually changed. Like you cannot add anything after your coffee is processed, it becomes a green coffee. But before that, you actually can add, for example, co-fermentation or even decaffeination before the coffee becomes green. And that opens up a lot of options for coffee and a lot of new flavors in coffee. But these new flavors may seem to be odd. It's like when you first time having a coffee that tastes like a watermelon or strawberry bubblegum, it's almost artificial, and it takes some time to adjust. It's even for me, first time to like drinking those processed coffee, and it's very, very heavily preference dependent. So if a judge loves it and it's so clear a flavor inside your cup, then the judges love it. And if, you know, the judge hates it, then it's just too artificial to them.
Yeah. There's two things I want to touch on. And what you just said, I think is really interesting. The first thing that you said, actually, I'll go to the second thing that you said since you said it most recently. You said it's very preference favored for some of those highly processed coffees. In my thinking, a lot of the times from what I've seen, it seems as though it has less to do with preference, but more so to do with if it tastes like peaches and it only tastes like peaches. If you can say it tastes like peaches and the judges agrees with you because it obviously tastes like peaches, then you're going to get points for that. But from your experience, what you're saying is it may not be quite as solid ground as that. Like there may be a little bit of wiggle room there. Like there may be a judge that really does have a preference against some of these coffees. And sometimes that may actually do a competitor more harm than good when it comes to using those coffees. Have you seen that happen also?
The heavily processed coffee has a problem is like you have a very, very pronounced significance of like a one single flavor, which is, for example, a co-fermented coffee. If it fermented with peaches, it tastes like peaches, right?
Sure.
But the problem in the Brewers Cup competition is the judges also look for complexity and balance. Although sure. it's not scored in the score sheet, but overall experience they have, they will say, hey, this coffee might be too monotonic or too sure. Simple or too see-through. Or it sometimes it has too strong of one flavor, and it starts to make them think it's lacks of sweetness or lack of like different type of acidity. So they could you could receive a relatively high score on your description. Of course, the description is very easy and it's very
sure.
Favorable for competition. But your overall like sensory score will, if the judges doesn't like it, you know, they will score it kind of lower.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really interesting, Weihong, because hopefully if what you're saying is true there, like hopefully we could see potentially a more balanced form of judging some of these coffees as we continue to progress in the industry, because I feel like for myself, for instance, last year when I competed, coming back out of COVID and stuff like that, I used a very, very simple, probably like the coffee, it was a great coffee, probably was realistically somewhere between like an 87, 88 point coffee. Wasn't anything crazy special. It was a good, really solid coffee. But it had it was very clean. It had a slightly longer extended fermentation, but it was still a washed coffee. That coffee, in my opinion, I think I probably shot myself in the foot with it a little bit because it was very complex. It was not very pronounced in anything in particular. And I think I probably did lose. I didn't make it to nationals that year. I was one place out, actually. I think I shot myself a little bit in the foot because those flavors weren't quite as pronounced. However, you could go the far end of things and you could use a coffee that has a very pronounced flavor because it was infused or it was co-fermented. And you have these very, very pronounced flavors, but it's almost monotone. What you're saying makes me kind of hope we can continue to get to that place where maybe there's a good balance between those two things. Maybe we can start to find a balance where the coffees that are being judged based on complexity and also a pronounced flavor profile. I think that would be something that I would have no problem with. I feel like personally, what I've seen, at least from my limited experience in competition, I've seen more so judges judging coffees really well that have that very pronounced flavor, regardless of the complexity. However, if what you're saying is true, then we might be moving in a good direction there with some of those coffees. I think I love to hear that. Okay, so you also mentioned something earlier that was a positive, and you did start to say that we are seeing new flavors that are kind of coming from some of these coffees, new flavors that we maybe have not experienced yet. However, they can be a little bit odd. You know, they can almost taste artificial. So you kind of have a positive there and a negative. Help me break that down. Help me break down more specifically. What are some of these positives that may come from some of these new flavors that are being developed in coffee? And then also help me maybe to understand a little bit more about when it's more negative, like when the flavors taste extremely artificial. What are you kind of describing there, and what are you kind of picturing there?
Yeah, I can give you an example of a like very, very like pronounced the negative point for heavily processed coffee is that sure. some of the infused coffee or co-fermented coffee having this this common problem that I found is that when they cool down, they have a very, very strong pronounced kind of like a tobacco leaf okay. or almost like a grassy tobacco, smoky, grassy sure. flavor. That's coming from the processing, like
okay.
for sure. And sometimes if this infused coffee or co-fermented coffee start to get too strong on the fermentation side, they could have that kind of like almost the tobacco leaf aftertaste. Sure. And that's how I can tell, like, if the process is over too much. Sure. And when the coffee cools down, you will get that kind of like almost tobacco leaf flavor. But for a very nice, nicely processed coffee, not only the new flavor or innovative point of the processing can show up in the cup, the sweetness can also stand up through the different temperatures, and the aftertaste is way cleaner in the cup. So that's what I think, that's what we are all looking for in coffee. And I think a better taste of coffee is just a delicious cup of coffee is what we're looking for.
I agree. Yeah. What do you think some of those obvious, it's come from processing. Do you have any inclination as to why it may start to taste like tobacco leaf particularly? Like, is there anything that that you think may be causing that when it comes to processing?
No, I can say that with very like high confidence because I'm not a expert in coffee processing. That's just something that I found in common that I've been tasting a lot of those kind of coffee, and when they cool down, they have this very, it's very pronounced to me. Maybe it's not very pronounced to some other people, but it's very pronounced to me. Like, I find this tobacco leaf presents in all of the heavily processed coffee, and that I can pick it up and I can tell, hey, this is somewhat processed with either infusion or co-fermentation. That's just a signature for me, and which I don't quite like that aftertaste. And that's just my preference. And the coffee that I'm looking for is a cleaner aftertaste coffee. You can have very interesting flavors, but the aftertaste has to be clean.
Yeah, I think I can think of a coffee that I had recently that, whenever I was cupping it while it was hot, had this really, really bright acidity. It was clearly a very extended fermentation. It wasn't, as far as I know, it wasn't infused or co-fermented with anything, but it was a very extended fermentation. And as I was cupping it, it had this really bright acidity, kind of booziness about it still. But as it cooled down, something that I noticed with some coffees that I'm just not fond of is when they start to cool, they start to have almost this, it's almost like this chocolate cake type of flavor, or sometimes it's even like, it might sound gross, but it's almost a cheesiness that I taste. Mm-hmm. It's almost like there's cheese somewhere in my coffee, this kind of moldy kind of quality that I taste. So I understand. And I think a lot of those things do come up kind of in the aftertaste. So I understand what you're saying there. And it's interesting. Okay, so I do have a question. Maybe we've kind of talked a little bit about the positives and the negatives, maybe more so some of the ways that they're impacting coffee competition. What are some of the things that may be going on the farm level? Now, I know you're not a I'm not claiming that you're an expert in coffee processing or in producing coffee, and I know you're not doing that either. And I want the listener to know that that's definitely not what we're trying to imply here. But from your limited experience, because as your role with Blendem, you end up traveling to Origin. You have traveled to Origin a decent amount. You're a judge in Best of Panama, right? You said Best of Panama. You just spent some time on with the with at Alita Estate, right? You just spent some time there. And maybe were you at Hacienda La Esmeralda also?
Yeah.
So you've spent some time at Origin, seeing some of these things happen. Panama in particular, I know that they're processing coffee particularly very cleanly, a lot of the time at least. Mm-hmm. But could you speak a little bit about have you seen this trend of infused coffee or co-fermented coffee? Have you seen it affect farmers in any way positively or negatively. Because I've heard some very limited talk of some ways it may be negatively affecting farmers, and also some limited talk as to how it may be positively affecting farmers. Mm-hmm. What have you seen in your limited experience with it?
Yeah, from my experience, I think the processing is generally having more positive than negative to the farmers, because actually they can add a lot of value. Let's say if they are selling a Keturah or Keturah-E, most of the time it's around like $4 to $5 per pound at most, if you are a very famous farm, right? If you're doing washed. Sure. But if you are adding processing, like a lot of Colombian producers, you can up the price to around $8 to $10 per pound. And yeah, that's added value there, because you have a very good processing. Your coffee tastes very good. Then like the roasters are willing to pay for it. So generally, this is a positive in processing. And the negative side, I would say there are some negative side that happens when the information gets missed, the transparency gets lost inside. Sure. Of the supply chain, and sure, from the producer side to the roaster side. So let's say some coffee, if you actually doing infusion, and you are not disclose that to the roasters, and the roaster cup it and ask, hey, is there anything infused? And they come back with, hey, we don't do infused coffee. It's not infused coffee. And it end up being an infused coffee, and it tastes very artificial, and that's actually hurting the reputation for the producer. I think, sure, that's something that we, at least for me, when I source the coffee, I value that very, very much. And I value the transparency, at least if you add anything in the process of fermentation, you should disclose to the roaster, because as a roaster, we're essentially roasting the coffee and serve to the customer. We are the the end point, like to the customers. So right, anything, we should be responsible for our customers. And there is another chain up there, which is the producer. And if they don't disclose all the information to us, and then we end up getting in trouble. So yeah, I think it's also the responsibility for all the roasters to do the due diligence for all the coffee they are sourcing.
Yeah. That's definitely something that Patrick and Kyle both talked about a little bit in this conversation that we've been mm-hmm. having. And something that, you know, it's interesting to hear the different perspectives, because for Patrick, you know, if something was infused, Patrick's not going to buy it, most likely, at least. I shouldn't speak for him, but from my conversation with him and from what I know about Patrick, he's not going to buy something that's been infused. But he has an issue, and he mentioned, you know, pretty specifically, like there's a big issue right now where people are infusing and not saying anything about it, or just saying that they're not infusing. Kyle's perspective was really interesting when it came to that. He just wants to know if things are being infused or not, you know? And for him, he's still going to buy it, you know, if it's being infused, if it tastes good. You know, and if it tastes good, and if it's being infused safely, and he can ensure that he's providing his customer something that's safe and you know, healthy to consume, then he's okay with buying an infused coffee. Where are you at with some of that stuff? Do you like to buy infused co-fermented types of coffees for your menu, or are you where do you kind of lie on that spectrum of things?
I would say I'm not a big fan for the infused coffee. Okay. I wouldn't personally knowing that's an infused coffee and buy it. Okay. It's just my personal preference, and that's how I want my brand to represent. So what I'm looking for in terms of processing is a perfect balance between the terroir and the process. Sure. So as a coffee shop that you are showcasing a lot of countries, regions, I really want, you know, the country's terroir to show inside of the coffee. Sure. But sometimes, if you have a, I'm talking about infused, and so you have things added in your coffee to add to the flavor. But sometimes a very interesting long time fermentation or extended fermentation could add some positive and interesting notes inside the coffee. And those are the coffee that I want to showcase sometimes. But just I've actually encountered some producers, I won't name names, but they claim it's not infused, and I really liked the coffee. And I served it, and that same year, I want to find out how they process coffee. So I went to their farm and to know, I want to know, learn everything about their processing. And it turns out it's another type of infusion. So it's just a kind of like a discrete, a more discrete infusion. They use a different strain of yeast, which generate type of flavor precursors inside the coffee. And, you know, but the thing, the how they market in terms of their processing, they focus on the temperature change for the during the process instead of like what yeast strain they're using in the fermentation. So I think that's also important, especially like US has less regulations, but in place like Europe, if you're using a like a genetic modified yeast, you have to disclose it. You have to let your customers know. But that information was lost inside of the, you know, during my purchase, or like even it was not even disclosed to me. So I stopped serving that coffee. And that's very important to me to be transparent. I don't need all the details about how you process coffee. I don't need your secret sauce on how you make the coffee taste that good, right? And not that I'm processing, I'm not going to tell any other producers about that. But I need to know if there's anything added or if there's anything crucial that I need to know before I serve this coffee.
We'd like to take a moment to mention Roastful, a coffee subscription company providing a tasting experience from three different roasters each month. Learn more at roastful.com. Now back to the show.
Now, let me ask you a question. I'm not going to ask you to name names. I'm not going to ask you to talk any more necessarily about the processing. I just want to know more about the yeast that you're talking about, because in my, I've had some yeast inoculated coffees that that I've really enjoyed. I think one of the best coffees that I've had to memory was from Heliana Georgialis over in Ethiopia. And she had a yeast inoculated coffee that was just so wonderfully pronounced. It was like a classic washed Ethiopian profile. But it was almost like everything was just turned up a notch, you know? It was just a, it was such a great, great, great coffee. Do you have issue with yeast inoculation, or was it more so the type of yeast that was being used that was inoculated that you had an issue with?
Yeah, it's more like a type of yeast. So,
a type of yeast.
Yes, for some farms, for example, like Hacienda La Esmeralda, what they did is they have a company help them to discover what's the natural yeast they have in their environment, in their farm. And they culture that type of yeast and to add that into their any of their yeast fermentation, and to help having a more pronounced flavor, because those yeasts are all found from their natural environment. So it's it's considered just the, to adding the intensity of the fermentation. I think that's perfect. That's good for me. But if you are using a lot of, for example, a lot of in beer industry, you have this flavored beer, you're using some specific yeast to generate some specific type of flavors. And if you're using any of the yeast from, for example, beer industry or any other industry, that you, I think you should disclose to the, your buyers, your customers about it, that you want to use this yeast to adding a pronounced flavor of certain flavors. And then we don't have any problem. It's just to the preference of whether the buyer will buy it or not, right? But if you don't disclose it, you claim that, hey, it's all fermented naturally, but that's not the case.
So if that producer who had used the specific yeast that they used, if they had disclosed that to you, that they were using that particular yeast, would you have bought that coffee knowing it? Or was it more so just the fact that you did not know it? Is that why you chose to stop serving it? What was it? What was the thing that made you want to stop serving it?
Yeah, so initially I bought this coffee. I thought this coffee was from their processing or from their terroir. They just have a very specific terroir that showcases this flavor. Sure. And from their processing, you actually make it very significant in the cup. But if you're using if you're using some yeast from beer industry, I might as well just add some syrup in my coffee. So if I knew that before, I wouldn't just bought that coffee, right? You're just using a more discreet way to generate the flavor for me to taste in the coffee. What I want to showcase is that what you can naturally find in the coffee and showcase from by the processing or the terroir. We're not lacking any flavors right now. We have we have 40 different type of flavors in the syrup. So why we need to use some very complicated way to add flavor inside the coffee? It doesn't make sense to me. So I wouldn't have bought it if I knew that flavor was infused from the specific type of yeast that's generating the byproduct of the flavor precursor. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I hear you. It's interesting perspective. It seems like you're very focused on terroir. That seems to be a huge emphasis for you. You would have some people push back with talking about yeast. Some people would push back and say yeasts are not flavoring anything necessarily, but more so creating flavor through fermentation because it's not necessarily an invasive product. Well, I guess it would be an invasive product to an extent, but it's not necessarily something that is flavoring the coffee, but more so creating flavor within the coffee. You would have some people that would push back there, but I also understand from what you're saying that if it's not naturally there in the environment, we could very well go down a path in coffee where everything just kind of starts tasting the same, you know, because it's all just being used. I think back to Isabelle Legeron, I think is her name. She's huge in the natural wine world, and I think back just a whole bunch of years ago, she did a talk, and she was talking about kind of that same thing. Like, you know, in the wine world, for her, everything kind of started just tasting the same, and things were a little bit more one-dimensional, but the wines that she would have here and there tended to be natural wines. They tended to be things that were less hands-on and more so focusing on naturally occurring yeasts that were in the terroir. So I definitely understand the perspective that you're coming from there. Weihong, I feel like we've touched on a lot. I don't know if there's anything necessarily that we need to hit on anymore. Do you have any closing thoughts that you would want any of the listeners to know? Is there anything, any projects you're working on that the listener, you want them to know? I'll just open the floor for you to say anything before we go.
Yeah. Right now we're actually start to plan on next expo. So as you know, next expo is going to be in Houston. So where we are based in. So we already booked a booth, and I think that's will be majority of our focus for the next year, just to prepare and planning the events for that next year expo. So if you are attending next year's expo in Houston, just to try to check us out in the shop and also in the show floor, and we will also share with you some amazing coffees. And the Best of Panama is next year, is next month. So I'm very, very much looking forward to what's this year's coffee. And I tasted some very, very amazing coffees this year.
Awesome. That's mm-hmm. awesome, Weehong. That's so cool. I'll tell the listener, if you're at Expo next year, you're definitely going to want to check out Blendin. I mean, if I'm planning on being at Expo next year, and I feel like I'm probably going to be living at your cafe while I'm there. So I'm excited about that for sure. I know there's going to be some really great stuff that's come out of that. Let me ask you one more question. Are you going to compete again, or are you hanging it up for a while?
Next year, I'm taking a break and focus more on the cafe side. But I don't think I can resist to not coming back. You know, I have to come back. And even like sure. watching the WBC competition is happening right now. I feel like I wanted to compete, but I really need to force myself to take 1 year of break. Okay. Because competition can be very exhausting, both emotionally and physically. But yeah, I think I might want to try barista when I come back.
I was wondering about that. I was wondering if you were going to try your hand at some barista competitions.
Yeah,
I think that'd be cool to see.
It looks very fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Weehong, I appreciate you coming on the show. And maybe we'll drop a link to Blendin, your website and your social in the show notes. But as for anything else, that's it for me. Thanks for listening to the show. And we'll be back next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to know more about Roastful and follow our upcoming projects, you can find us on social media at Roastful Coffee or online at www.roastful.com. If you'd like to know more about our guests and their companies, you can visit the links in our show notes. Thank you.